pointing there, Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky's Torah on Parshas Bayit, and it's entitled "Bischus Nashim Tzidkanias." Bischus Nashim Tzidkanias Negalu Mimitzrayim. We know that the schus that Klal Yisrael left Egypt with was in the schus of righteous women. Ma Pesher Adover. What does that mean exactly? How did they get us out of Mitzrayim? Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, by the way, and we spoke about it at the beginning of last month, was a magid who had a tremendous sense of humor. He was, which is rare because he wasn't from a school that was really known for its humor. He was from Nevardik. Nevardik were very, very serious people, but he somehow was different, and his entire approach to Musar was very. He was just very funny. I was like to hear him once, I think it was, and he had the whole place rolling. But sometimes, if you have a very good sense of humor, that's a good vehicle to open up people's hearts and to get Musar in, and that's what he did. So we're going to see a little bit in this piece some of his humor, and then we're going to take away a few jokes and a lot of Musar. So he says, what's the pshat that bizchus nashim tzidkanias we were zeicha to leave Egypt? Yedei ani mashur gilim leim. He says, I know what people say in the street. I know what the pedestrian pshat in what people say about this. Sha'am Yisrael hayim me'utad liyais meshubad arba me'ashana. Klal Yisrael were destined to be enslaved for 400 years. That was the Bris Ben Absarim, that were going to be slaves for 400 years. But we know that we were only slaves for 210 years. So what happened? V'zok mitaykef hashiva v'nichmu rachmei shamayim. We pleaded with the Rabbeinu Shalom, and we asked for his mercy to shorten our sentence. Aval eich efshar legalam bavur masayim v'esher shan bovad. How is it possible to redeem them after just 210 years? It's like half the time spent. We should leave for such a short amount of our sentence. So Amru Hanashim Atzikaniyas. So the women said, Rabbeinu Shalom, Tigalei Sam Keis, you free them now. Let them go as slaves now. We'll take care of the rest. We're going to take care of the shibud of these guys forever. Meaning, we'll marry them, we'll put the ball and chain on them, and we're going to take care of them. So that was the deal. This is a joke, okay? That was the deal that they're, well, somewhat of a joke. The deal was that the Nashim Tzidkanias took it upon themselves to continue all of the extra years of Shibud. Of course, that's said tongue-in-cheek. And then he says, but even on this pshat, Shazel lav dafka nashim tzidkanias is stam nashim, ain a nightless chayak b'shibud. But why is it dafka nashim? All women should be should do this. Not why specifically nashim tzidkanias. So he continues and he says that sheshamati es asipor b'rabishayla mushkat mipraga zatzal bal Rashi b'samim. He was the author of the Sefer Rashi b'samim. And listen to this story. Who is sparach b'isha kakasov sheka achein. He married a really, really frum woman. What did she do? In the morning, he came back from shul, this Rabbi Shaila, and he thought he'd have a nice breakfast prepared on his dining room table. He thought he'd have freshly squeezed orange juice and an omelet and a bagel. But instead he comes home and what does he see? His wife is davening. Bitzarayim shav mutash me'ashir shemas le'talmidov. In the afternoon he comes home after giving a difficult shir to his talmidim. He was expecting what? He was expecting lunch. Guess what his wife was doing? V'ishtai terem simas michsas pirkei tilim ayayim. She didn't finish saying tilim yet. So he was hungry by breakfast, hungry by lunch. So basically, he was not so pleased with who he married. Neneva Omer, so what is he going to do? He says to her as follows. Atam uvanim lidivei Rashi HaKadosh al HaPasuk leitai v'yesab levadai esalei ezer kinegdai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to, it's not good for a man to be alone. I'm going to make him an ezer kinegdai. What does that mean literally? An ezer kinegdai. Ezer means a helper. Kinegdai is opposite him or different than him. Zacha and Chazal darshan that to mean if you're a zaycha, she'll be an ezer, she'll be a helper. Loi zacha kinegda. If you're not zaycha, then she's going to be opposite you. V'hainu, what's the pshat in that? Shem zacha aizartai. If he's zaycha, she will be helping him. Who mispal? He's going to be going to shul daven like he's supposed to. What's she doing? V'himachina ruchas pegah. She's going to be preparing him a breakfast. You know, there's once a joke that said about a husband who marries a kala, and the next morning, the morning after the chasna, so he, you know, his kala wakes up, and he says, honey, good morning. How are you? Baruch Hashem, everything is good. Good. He says, come down to the. I wanna, you know, show you something. So she's all excited. You know, she goes down to the kitchen, dining room area, and she sees that he like prepared a beautiful breakfast. There's like a white linen tablecloth on the dining room table, and there was cutlery, and there was beautiful china, and there was freshly brewed coffee, and there was omelets, and there was bagels and donuts and cupcakes and croissants, and everything was, and then there was a freshly folded newspaper right by her seat. And she says, wow, I got the best husband in the world. This is amazing. Thank you. He says, you see this table? Every morning, that's how I expect you to make it for me. So he says, that's the pshat. Zacha, if you're Zaycha, then she'll be an Ezer. She's going to prepare breakfast for you while you're davening. And then when you're going to Shir, she's going to be preparing lunch for you. And then, Hu Yeshev Vestin, V'don Dinei Torah, V'yimisader Sabayis Mechina Ruchas Erev, at night when he's at night Seder, he's going to give a din, he's asking a din Torah, she's going to be preparing a good supper for him. Avolim loy zacha, but if he wasn't zaych, he didn't merit to get a good wife, harehi kinegda. That's what it means. Loy zacha is kinegda. What does it mean, kinegda? Taino mulay akmusas. Kinegda either means opposite or it means like a counterpart. She's kinegmi. She's my counterpart. Who mispalo? He davens. Vi mispalo? She's davening. Who meiser shir? He's giving a shir. Vi amer still in my mother's. And she says to him, Who dandine tariv emeres perak shira, whatever. Say she's like doing whatever he's doing. You can't have two men in a marriage. You've got to have one man and one woman. Sometimes, by the way, it's not a male chauvinist thing. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes it's the guys that I know certain people that their wife has a much more lucrative career than they did. So basically the husband stays home with the kids. He's Mr. Mom. He takes care of, he's the one that makes breakfast, lunch, and supper. And I've been doing that this week. If you're wondering why Yitzi is running around yeshiva all day, it's because my wife went away with my daughters for intercession. So I'm making him breakfast, I'm taking him out for supper, and schlepping him to chasnas and everything. So he, but sometimes it works that way. But somebody's got to be, you know, the ezer, and somebody's got to be the kinegda. Somebody's got to be.
We could live on the thing, tuna fadin, then Coke. That's what we've been discussing.
Anyway, but that's the way it has to be. In marriage, there's got to be somebody that's doing the ruchnias, somebody doing the gashmias, whoever it is. But you can't have both people doing ruchnias, and you shouldn't have two people doing gashmias. There's got to be an ezer kenegdai. So he says, Rabbi Agulinsky, using this as just another extension of the cube shot that he's building on, avalei nena mis'ainanim, but they don't complain our shar b'schus and yatzanim mitzrayim. Meaning, so he's saying that that's the pshat, because noshim tzidkanias, the shibud, the difficulty is when in marriage sometimes comes dafka when your wife is too big a tzaddikas. If she's the one that's doing all the davening and all the learning and whatever, it's sometimes it's not so easy on the husband, and that's the shibud that they were being mashlim after Mitzrayim. But anyway, Taiv Eich Neimer Zapir Shecha, that's one pshat. Vabir Amiti. Okay, but now that we've gotten past the humorous pshatim, now we're going to get to the real pshat. B'mahayu hanoshim adifas al gvarim v'mitzrayim. What was the maila exactly that women had over men? And the schus of noshim tzikonius, we left Egypt. Not because of the men and the women that were tzikonius, but the women. What did the women have over the men that they, what was their secret weapon to get us out of Mitzrayim? So he says there's one secret weapon that women have, and that's b'shmiras gidrei hatznias b'levush, that a woman must dress tzniastik. If a woman dresses modestly, doesn't mean that she has to, you know, have no sense of style. She could be very stylish, but the etzem begadim have to be tzniastik. And when a woman has a tzniastik amalbush, that's a tremendous chus that a woman takes with her, because a woman generally wants to show off her beauty. That's basically what a woman has. A woman's primary, that's not all she has, she has other aspects as well, but it's very important. A woman's looks is very important to her. And therefore, that's why rive of women in the world are very into their styles and into their fashion, into their all their shoes and their accessories and their shetels and their jewelry, because it's very important for them to look good, period. So when a woman is able to sort of not look so good because she wants to be more tsanua, that's a tremendous schus that a woman has. That's like taking something that's very important to them, fundamental to their very essence. That's the way a woman is generally wired, that they want to be attractive in general. And by toning it down and by dressing in an appropriate manner, as befits a Bas Yisrael, that is a wonderful merit that they carry with them. Shari achar advarim shebeglolam niglo, one of the things that we were redeemed because of is shleshinu levusham. We didn't change our mode of dress. Uminayin shleshinu levushim. Where do you know that from? How do you know? Maybe we wore Egyptian clothing. Shenitztavu lishol me'amitzrim klei kesev uklei zav usmalis. When we were commanded in this week's parasha in Shemais Gimel, we were commanded to take from the mitzrim, to borrow silver and gold and clothing, the samtem, al-b'neichem al-b'neiseichem, and you should put these clothing on your sons and on your daughters. Very strange pasuk. You should borrow Egyptians' clothing, and you should put it on your sons. What about me? Why can't I wear it? Why can't my wife wear it? Why do I have to give it to my kids, these Egyptian clothing? Umadua loinemar gamayasu emakle kesev lazav. And also, why didn't they say what to do with the silver and gold? That's not shver. We're going to use the silver and gold kelim. What's the point of the begadim? What am I going to do with this Egyptian clothing? Egyptians, we've discussed in previous weeks, were the most decadent society in the world. And maybe they were even able then to surpass our decadence today. So the Egyptian, you can imagine the types of clothing that the Egyptians wore, and they wore very short dresses and without any sleeves and v'chule. And so what was who was going to be able to use these clothings that were borrowed from the Egyptians? What do you do with that? Lo yala adashi Yehudi atolvishem. It's not shaykh that a Jewish woman would be wearing the Egyptian women's clothing, because it was completely, you know, beneath their dignity. That's why the Torah has to tell you, you take these dresses that were, you know, short for the women, but it's perfect for a little girl. That's going to fit my daughter just perfectly. So that's how you know Shoshino Es Levusham, Klal Yisrael didn't change their malbush. They were very scrupulous. They didn't get into the styles of the Egyptians. They didn't, just because they were surrounded by them, does not mean that they suddenly succumbed to all of the fashion that was pervasive in Egypt at the time. V'achen lebesayf ne'amar, daber no'a v'azne'a am v'yishol ishmeis re'eo v'ishmeis re'usa k'le kesev k'le zov, v'asmola she'eo chashubas me'akesev ha'zov, ha'yirak avor ha'yiladim ha'ktanim. Okay, v'asaper. So now he's going to bring a great story. An amazing part about Rav Yaakov Galinsky was that he had tremendous mesira. He lived in Bnei Brak for a lot of the years of his life. He died a very old man, but for, I'd say, probably at least half, if not a rive of his life, he lived in Bnei Brak. And he lived in Bnei Brak at the time that Bnei Brak was still a very small city. Today, Bnei Brak is a hustling, bustling city of, hundreds of thousands of Haredim. But in the early days, if you see pictures or postcards of the old Bnei Brak, it was literally like a little farm settlement. It was not exactly, when we speak about Bnei Brak in the Haggadah, Shem Suv Bnei Brak, it's in the vicinity of that, but it's not exactly there. It's a few miles off of the original Bnei Brak that was back in the times of the Tanaim, but it was basically farmland. And that's about the time that the Chazon Ish started moving in and the Panimitcher Rav started moving in, and it was still very, very undeveloped, and everything was, like you see, dirt road. Like today, it's a huge, I'm sure a lot of you have been to Bnei Brak. My son, who is in learning Eretz Yisrael, his yeshiva took him this past Shabbos for a Shabbos in Bnei Brak, and he went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky twice, once Erev Shabbos, once on Friday night, and they went to Gershon Edelstein, the Yeshiva of Panovich, and they went to Vision Sittish. Today it's an amazing Yerat Torah. But back then it was a very small city, and Reb Yaakov Galinsky had a lot of opportunities to get very close with the Chazon Ish, with the Panovich Rav, and with others, the Stipler, and others, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Badal Chaim. And so he brings throughout these svarim, these amazing svarim, this called the Gadita. It's like a 10-volume set of svarim that I bought at the beginning of the year, and that's what we're giving the Vadon this year. So he brings a lot of stories from these great Gedalim of yore, of Bnei Brak. So here's one such story. Pam Alisi Lebeis Maran HaChazon Ish. Once I went into the house of the Chazon Ish Zatzal, for Avram Yosef Wolf Zatzal Yatzim Echadrei. Out of his house was walking. I bumped into Rabbi Avram Yosef Wolf. I don't know who that is, but he was apparently a head of a seminar that was opening in Bnei Brak. This was the first year that he started this girls' seminary. Bnei Brak Haisaz Kitano, like I just said, at the time, Bnei Brak was still a very small, undeveloped settlement. Hakol Hikiras Kulam, and it was a time that everybody knew one another. It's a time that people still were able to know one another. It's like if you go to Muncie today, you speak to the old timers in Muncie, they remember time that they were able to know every single person in Muncie. It was like a very small, nice, out-of-town community. And then it exploded. People started moving into all parts of Muncie, and there are Hasidim, and there's Vishnitz, and there's everything in Muncie today. Litvish, and Mechule, and Yeshivas, and Beis Medrash Elyon, and all types of things came up. And now it's like you can't know anyone in Muncie because there's so many people. And all the houses are so far apart, so you're basically just on your own. But there were times that, you lived in communities and you actually knew people. So he says, this is a time that we were all, k'mishpacha gedela, we were one big family. U'sha'altiv, and I asked him, mechadash, what's new? Anos, he said, nirash. He was sort of very shaking. Nechnasti el ha'chazenish v'sha'alti, I entered into the Chazon Ish's home and I asked him the following question. HaGemara Emeresh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bara Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says that Hashem created a Yetzer Hara Ubara Lo Tayra Tavlin. And he created the Torah as a tavlin. The Torah is an antidote to the Yetzahara. Tamisulsi Sharm Kaisev, Shem Yetzer, Ha'adam the Kaichesav, Haidia Sheza Eitza Kenegana Yetzer, Ein Eitza Cherazulase. The Ramchal writes in Misulsi Sharm, what this Gemara means is not that this is one of many options to beat your Yetzahara, it's really the only option. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wired us with the Yetzirah, so he has the off switch also. He knows how to, if he created the problems in our life through the Yetzirah, he knows how to diffuse the Yetzirah. And he's telling us in this Gemara that the only way to diffuse the Yetzirah is what? With Torah. So, and there's no other Yetzirah, that's it. There's Torah, Torah, Torah. That's the only way to battle the Yetzirah. So, ma ta'asena ha'noshim she'en alim d'starah. So, he's starting a seminary, and he has to be mechanech a whole generation of Beis Yaakov girls now. So he asked the Chazon Ish, no, boys have yeshiva. They sit and learn all day. So they have an Eitzah, how to be miskaber over the Eitzah. They can control the Eitzah. What does a girl do? Okay, girls, they can learn a little bit, but they don't learn a whole day. And believe it or not, girls have a Eitzahara also. So how do they control their Yetzirah? How do they keep things under control? If they don't have the Torah that we have to fight it. That's what I asked the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish answered me, V'anani, Hanashim mimagres es ha-Yetzahara. You know how the Nashim are able to stop the Yetzirah? B'shmira al-Gidrei hatznias. When women are Shimer, the Gidrei Atznias, when they're able to control their Tznias, when they're able to be Makben on Tznias, that's the way that they're able to rein in their Yetzirah. This is a very, very important Yesaid that women should know, that the way their Tairah, Kaviyachal, their way of beating the Yetzirah is through Tznias. If a girl dresses in a tzniyistic manner, that will rein in their Yetzirah. That will control the Yetzirah. Just like when a boy, you know, Baruch Hashem, for the most part, boys generally dress tzniyistic. So they have to learn Torah in order to do that, because that's what is the Yetzirah killer for a guy. But for a girl, the Yetzirah is a very strong foe, and they have to be careful. The way that they're able to battle the Yetzirah is by being Shemer Tznias. It's an interesting story I saw recently the Chasam Sefer, the great Chasam Sefer who lived in the 1800s. So he had a daughter that was very beautiful. And he came home one day and she was crying. And he said, what's wrong? She said, well, I was walking out in the street and I saw that men were staring at me and I'm so scared that they're going to be nichshel as a result of my beauty. So she said, please daven that I should lose my beauty. She says to the Chasam Sefer. So he said, maybe think about it a little bit, you know, why, you know, it's a little radical. She says, no, I decided I don't want to cause guys to be nichshel because of me. And I understand that I'm naturally beautiful and I don't want it. It's a tremendous thing, right? For a girl, that's like the ultimate form of tznias. A girl doesn't want to, not only does she want to dress tzniastic, but she also doesn't want to look beautiful. So the Chasam Sefer accepted what she said and he davened that she should lose her beauty, and she got very sick all of a sudden, and with the sickness she had a lot of tzaras and a lot of worries and her complexion changed and she taka became very unattractive. And the Chasam Sefer gave her a bracha that bizchus, that you were so makbid on your on not being machshel men with your beauty, you're going to, and you were willing to lose the illumination that you had from you, that great yaifi that you had, you're going to be zeichet to have a grandson. You're going to get married, and you're going to be zeichet to have a son, rather, that will light up the world with his chachma, with his Torah. And I believe her son was Reb Shlomo Zalman Spitzer, who was a tremendous Adam Gadol, and all because of this Maisa. But that's a woman, the way that she is Magder her Yetzirah, the way that she reigns in her Yetzirah is by being medactic with Tznius. And it's a very difficult thing because we're living in times that fashion is fashion, and women, you know, and I think, you know, it's just the reality that, you know, shetels are human hair shetels. They're nicer than women's normal hair. The shetel is supposed to be a good thing to cover your natural hair so that, you know, because sarbisha arba, so this is, it used to be like, when I was growing up as a kid, my mother used to get her shetel sent in a box. It was like it was probably flammable. It was like a $30 thing. It was from a certain company that, you know, it was like a cheap synthetic shetel, and that's what women wore. And then some chacham came up with the idea of making human hair shetels, and now women, these shetels that you see, you know, women wearing, they're thousands of dollars. The really expensive ones could be $8,000 to $10,000, believe it or not. And the cheaper ones, if you find them at Sia, it's $2,000, but that's mamish. You don't want to tell anyone that you got that brand. But that's the way it is. So the shetels are that. And people dress very, very fancy, and that's just the reality. That's that. But that's not really the way it's supposed to be. A woman is supposed to dress simply and sanua and be very medactic on all of the... I'm just reminded. I had a friend who he went out with a girl from Brooklyn, and, you know, like more of a right wing family. My friend was in YU at the time, so it's a crazy story. But he picks her up, and she comes in the car. She looks all from and everything, and like in the car, all of a sudden she starts taking off her skirt, and she has a pair of pants under her skirt. And my friend says, "What are you doing?" My friend was a very firm boy. He happened to go to YU, but like he says, from as any other, you know, he's a very yeshivish, he's a regular guy. So, but she thought that because she was being read to a YU guy, that automatically he's like modern Orthodox, and she was like, you know, flexing her modern Orthodox side to her. She was, you know, like coming out of the closet in his car. And, you know, and he said, well, you know, this is, I wanted to wear pants. And he says, yeah, but I'm not going out with a girl that wears pants. I want a firm girl like that that's going to dress sneastic. But, and, you know, I think it's a good metaphor because a lot of people, they seem from, but they're not, it's fake from kite. It's not legit. It's not a real tznius. It's like it's for the belt we dress tznius, but really deep down inside, and any way that we could cut corners, we will. And whether it's, and again, don't look at me, I'm not the poster boy for bulletproof stockings and tichels and whatever. That's not whatever. But in theory, that's the way it should be. In theory, a Bas Yisrael is somebody that really takes her tznius in a very, very serious way. It doesn't mean that she can't look nice and look pretty and look attractive, but at the same time, not to wear it on her sleeve, literally, and not to, you know, have everybody have to know exactly, you know, how fancy she is and how and live a lifestyle that's not a Teredika lifestyle. And that was the schus, because women in Mitzrayim, our great-great-grandmothers in Mitzrayim, were so medactic on this, even though they lived in the most decadent times, and everybody was walking around wearing the most pritzestik outfits imaginable, and it was very. It would have been easy, maybe, or would have been something of interest to them, possibly to their yetzahara, at least, to sort of, you know, follow suit and to follow the way that of the world or the fashions of the times. But they didn't. They were misgabra over themselves, and they were medactic that they will not wear those types of Egyptian clothing. They'll give it to their kids, because for their kids it's perfect. The length will go down to their knees, but for themselves, I'm not wearing that. That's not Yiddish. That's Gayish. And that's the tremendous chus that Nashim Tzidkanias had to get us out of Mitzrayim. V'nei b'Mitzrayim, l'gvarim adayin l'haysa Torah. Torah, don't forget, we didn't really have Torah back then. We had parts of Torah. Avraham Avinu, the others had Torah, but in Mitzrayim, we didn't really have Torah as a formal limud, as we did after Matan Torah. So the men didn't have that way of being miskaber over the Yetzara. So the men, I'm sure the Jewish men were makbid on everything, and they did reign in the Yetzara. But the main way that Klal Yisrael stayed from, the main way that we were able to rein in and to keep in check the Yetzahara that was probably not easy to control was through the women. V'anashim shamra gidra tznias, even before Matan Torah, that they were shamer the gidra tznias, ulefichach bizchusan nigalu. They had a zchus that we didn't have. We didn't have the Torah that was going to protect us and make sure that we're staying straight. The reason why we were staying straight was because the women, our mothers, our wives, our sisters, our daughters, they were keeping us in check because they were saying, this is who we are. And very often, if you marry a firm wife, besides for the fact that she herself is firm, and that's a great schuss for you, but she'll also keep you on the straight and narrow. Because if you're, and that's really what happened in Mitzrayim, it seems. I remember there was an amazing story with Reb Shmuel Auerbach, Zecher Tzadik Levrach. Reb Shmuel Auerbach was the son of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he was a huge Talmud Chacham. He was one of the Gedolei Hadar. And in fact, Reb Shlomo Zalman once went into a chasna with Reb Shmuel, and as soon as he came into the chasna, everyone stopped and they started singing Yahomim Al Yimeh Emelech, you know, that a song that's reserved for the Gadol Hadar. So normally when Reb Shlomo Zalman would walk in, he would start going like this, and they have, you can watch on YouTube, they have like videos where they start giving Reb Shlomo Zalman praise and singing. He's like, it was physically sickening for him to get that covered. But this time he was just walking in, he was fine. And somebody asked him, doesn't the Rosh Yeshiva, why didn't it bother him that they're singing to him? He says, they weren't singing for me, they were singing for my son Reb Shmuel. He's a Gadol Hadar, you know, they weren't singing for me. But that just gives you an idea of how great Reb Shmuel was. So Reb Shmuel, unfortunately, didn't have children. He had many talmidim, but he didn't have biological children. But he did have a very amazing wife. I think her name was Rachel. In fact, he writes, I have a sefer at home called Ayel Rachel, I think it's called, and it's basically a tribute to her. Yes, but there's a part of it, in one of the volumes, there's a whole hakdama that he writes about her. There is some on, I think mine is on Elul and Yom Nairam, but I think he has on other Yom Tov. Okay, so you have to get mine. So he writes about her. So one of the things that he writes in there is that he, when they would walk in the street, she was extremely pious and, you know, very shamer and everything, as you can imagine. And when she was, when they would walk in the street together, she would walk in front of him, and she, his face would be down to the ground, and she would basically tell him, okay, it's okay to walk. And then, like, if there would be a woman coming to her, he said, go, you know, close your eyes, go off to the side of the road. Like, she would mamish, like chaperone him, so that he wouldn't have to see anything that he wasn't supposed to see. So if you marry a girl that's very from, besides for the fact that your kids will be from, your house will be from, Tyra Dick, and But it's very good for you, because if you marry a girl that's, you know, very, you know, not so makbid on snias, and then you could do whatever you want. You're walking in the street, you're watching things online, you're watching videos, and she doesn't care. She's watching with you. She's fine with it. But if you're makbid on a girl that's very herself, very frum, so then you don't have the chutzpah to watch things that you're not supposed to be watching, or to go places, or to look at things, or to vacation in certain spots that, you know, how could I do that to her? Like, she's so focused on snias, how dare I do that to her? And that's the schus that we left Mitzrayim with. The schus of Nashim Tzidkanias is a tremendous thing. And don't think that the times then were much different than they are today. And that, well, then, back then, Shkayach, they were, you know, it doesn't seem like it was so much different. It seems like it was very difficult back then also. Yes, there's tremendous taivas today, and we're exposed to things that are crazy and impossible, seemingly, to overcome. You walk out on any street and any place and any website and any magazine, any newspaper today is all really, really terrible. But in Mitzrayim, it wasn't much better either. I don't know what the streets looked like in downtown Pisum and Ramses either. Goshen, I don't know. But yet, they stayed very makbid on these things. And again, you guys are very, very fortunate that you're here in this yeshiva and that you came tonight to this vad, and that you're at an age that you're still not married and you still can have the bechira to make good decisions. Now, if you didn't come to the vad tonight, you wouldn't know these things, and when you date, you'll be looking for things that are perhaps a little different than now that we heard what Yaakov Galinsky has to say about the matter. Even if it's off by, even if it's a mashu to the right, even if we thought we were going to get a girl like this, and now we're going to go for a girl that's a little bit to the right, that the dividends of that are tremendous. It's Olam Umlaye. And when you're making these decisions, I don't know how many of you were here on Shabbos when Rabbi Tenenbaum spoke, but he's said an amazing vart that it's kedai to repeat. But he basically said that the choices that you make when you're young are responsible for everything that happens to you when you're older. So when you get my age, it's not that, you know, when you get my age, let's put it this way, I am who I am, for better or for worse, because the decisions that I made when I was your age. So the decisions that I made that were good, solid decisions, I'm still enjoying, I'm reaping the benefits. The decisions that I made that were disastrous, also suffering from that. Whatever you do in life, at your age, that's what you're going. It's not just at your age. It's going to affect your entire nitzchias in this world and the next world. So, it's very important that we convened here tonight and that we learned about this sugya. And you know, this seems to be more of a shir to be giving to girls, but I think not. I think it's a much more important shir to be giving to boys who are about to marry girls, or who are in the parsha soon, if not now, of going out and dating and figuring out what they're looking for. And if you're influenced by your roommates who are going out, and you know, and you want to hear their tire about what to look for, then you'll get one type of girl. If you're going to Yaakov Galinsky's Vad and you're listening to his tire and his lifetime of wisdom and his Messiah from the Chazon Ish and his Messiah from the Alter von Nevardik, then you get a different perspective. Obviously, the girl has to, you have to get along with the girl, she has to be an Ezer Kenegdish, she has to shtim with your personality, but it's very, very important to consider what we learned tonight. Because it's really, your children will be different, your grandchildren, everything will change based on who you marry. If you marry a frum girl, you know, very stark and very makbid on snias and very makbid on your learning and your davening, and she's benching and she's davening and she's legit, she's sincere, then you'll have a tarotika house. If you marry a girl because she's very cool, you had a great time on the date, she's very pretty, she has a great personality, and she's bubbly and she's schmoozy and she's flirtatious and whatever, so good luck. It might work out, it might not work out, but you have to be very careful, because the decisions that you're making now or in the near future directly impacts everything else in your life. I always say, you know, this window that you have right now in Lander College and Mishmeres Shel Talmud. These years from, let's say, from 1920 till 23, the college age, Beis Medrash age years, are the most pivotal years of your life. Everything that you will be when you're in your 30s, in your 50s, in your 80s, in your 100s, Mitzvah Hashem, it all hinges on now. Because you're deciding now what career you're going to be going for, deciding now what type of girl you're going to be marrying, you're deciding who your chevra is, you're deciding about how much you're learning in the Beis Medrash, what you're learning in the Beis Medrash, how much hasmada you have, how much Yir Shamayim you have, how much Musar you have, how many vadin you go to, how many shmuzin you go to, how many shabbosim you stay in yeshiva and yom tovim. All of these things, don't think that it's a dvarm shel mabakach, that it's irrelevant and you're just, these are the main, if there's one time to get it right, it's now. It's a tremendous achrayas on the rabbeim and the yeshiva to get it right with you, but it's a tremendous achrayas for you to yourselves to make sure to absorb as much mussar as you can, as much hadrach as you can. Like, soak it up. It's not a time to miss a single vad, a single shmuz, a single shir klali, a single sichas mussar, anything. Schaparayim, because now's the time that you need it. You don't need it when you get to be a balabas in your 40s. It's not going to help too much. You are what you are, and you can get a little frumer, a little, but now's the time that it all counts. This is when you're making big decisions. This is when you need your hashkafas to be like a number one. And if they're less than that, then it's directly going to have impacts on everything, on nitzchias. And so I think it's a very important topic. This sneeze for women, you're asking, well, go give that in a Beis Yaakov. What are you giving it to us? Because you need it more than they do. You need to understand how to choose a wife now so that your children will look different, your grandchildren will look different, you will look different. Because you married a girl that will keep you in check, and that you will keep her in check, and that you'll be able together to be b'nei b'yis nem and b'yisrael.